the next kingdom to oppress them, when they got it together and went into the land, and Joshua took the land, and the kingdom split under Jeroboam, 10 to the north and 2 to the south. It was the Assyrian kingdom out of Nineveh that was the second one to walk on them and take the 10 tribes into bondage. The Assyrian kingdom was conquered by the Babylonian kingdom. It was the Babylonian kingdom culminating, as I said, in the taking of Zedekiah at Jerusalem that finished the taking of God's people into bondage, and only a bare remnant with Jeremiah. Jeremiah was prophesying, saying it's going to happen. They said, "Have you got a word from the Lord for us, Jeremiah?" He said, "I sure have. Don't go down to Egypt." They promptly packed up and went to Egypt. Disobedient people that they were. And Jerusalem was wiped out. Now the Babylonian kingdom has got its foot on them. The conqueror of the Babylonian kingdom is the Medo-Persian. The Medes first and the Persians second. The conqueror of the Medo-Persian Empire is the Alexandrian Grecian Empire that extended clear into India. The Grecian Empire would break into four parts: Cassander and Lysimachus, then the Egyptian and the Seleucids in the Syria-Assyrian-Babylonian crescent area. The Grecian Empire, after breaking into four parts, would be conquered by the Romans. And the Roman Empire would be the last great world empire, except it would reassemble itself in the 10 toes of Nebuchadnezzar's image, loosely held together as iron and clay. The last great world empire will come in the time of those 10 kingdoms that reconstitute the Roman Empire, when one out of the portion of the Roman Empire that was the Grecian portion conquered by them would rise up as Antichrist. Those are the 7 heads and 10 horns. The 7 heads, the Egyptian, Assyrian, Babylonian, Medo-Persian, Grecian, Roman, right on up to the last assemblage of the 10. Then comes Antichrist, to whom the 10 will give power, which is the 8th kingdom, suddenly formed with Antichrist ruling it. This is the beast on which an established church will ride. The angel said to me, "Why do you marvel as you see this scarlet woman, this false church? I'll tell you the mystery of the woman and the beast that carrieth her, which hath the 7 heads and 10 horns. The beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit." What does that complicated phrase mean? The beast that thou sawest was. The Grecian Empire is not, because the Roman Empire conquered it and destroyed it and crushed it and put it down. So the beast was and is not. That's fact of history. Grecian Empire conquered. Roman Empire is, so the Grecian Empire is not. But suddenly you understand it's not just the government or the earthly ruler of the government at this point, but suddenly a power behind it. The beast that thou sawest was. It's an evil angel that ruled the Grecian Empire. He was a ruler. When? Pause it right there. Let me read. Don't you turn. You can find it later. I've read it to you before, but I think instead of quoting, I want to read it this time. In the book of Daniel, when Daniel had been praying, and the angel came and answered his prayer, said, "I heard you 21 days ago, but I had trouble getting here. The prince of Persia resisted me." He's talking about the demon power a fallen angel that rules that domain where the prince of the power of the air assigns his lieutenants. I came, but the prince of Persia resisted me. Michael is always the prince over God's people, Israel, the Jews, the Hebrews. One giant prince, perhaps more powerful than any prince since Lucifer. The name Lucifer means star of the morning. Job saw Lucifer when he was called the crowning cherub in the mountain of God. Ezekiel 28. Ezekiel saw him when he was in Eden, covered with jewelry, before he had fallen. Jeremiah saw the earth when there were dwelling and meeting places of intelligent beings, but no man was there, before the cataclysm struck it. And Lucifer became lifted up in pride. Jesus tells in history, in the principles of the Greek text, I saw him cast down. A third of heaven went with him. One third of the angelic beings. And as I said on festival, don't let tradition change your viewpoint of these superhuman beings that the Bible is full of. When you tell your little boy, why doesn't he act like an angel? Get scared quick. He's liable to cut the head off of 40 people in town in 2 minutes. I mean, they're mean dinglings. The prince of Persia resisted him. Because when Lucifer was cast down, a third of heaven went with him. Some of that third of heaven are allowed to roam loose as his battle troops, as his lieutenants, in this domain that the prince of the power of the air has, an intermediate area, sometimes called the heavenlies in the Bible. Look, I'm not preaching some far-out junk. I'm not a cultist. I just say, if you don't be a Christian, be one. If you don't claim to believe the Bible, make sure you get past the surface and those simple little moral homilies. Some people that think I look bad and think I don't represent God properly reveal their ignorance of the way God represents Himself in God's book. There are some mean forces out there. And when we start becoming rebels in the kingdom, we're in for some trouble. Now, how many Christians understand that you have become rebels in a kingdom? If you think, oh, Castro was hated by the powers that ruled that island when he was revolutionary, you haven't seen anything of the way the devil froths in his council chambers every time the name of Gene Scott and Faith Center comes up. If you think Duke Majan gets mad, you ought to see the devil. In fact, he's even mad to Ed Masry because he's on our side. And Ed thinks he's my counselor and defends me. He better be glad I'm with him because I still got a grip on the angels and he's not too sure they exist yet. I mean, I may need him to protect me against the Duke Majan types. He needs me to protect him against these dragons. Well, I want to tell him something. I ain't no match for him either. But I got a handhold on those powers that help us. And that's why Paul says, we wrestle not against flesh and blood. We wrestle against principalities and powers and evil forces in high places and rulers in dark places. Therefore, put on the whole armor of God. that you may be able to stand, not grin, stand and withstand, not stroke, and come now, let us reason together, stand, and get a poke in or two while you're at it. There's a mean characters out there. This angel had to fight him 21 days. You say, I've heard this before. I know you have. Not in this context. And I'm not going an hour and a half today. I'm about done. Just hang in there till I pull the chain on this. Now, I've come to answer your prayer, Daniel, and I never would have made it if the angel Michael, the only one, it seems, that's a match for Lucifer, hadn't come to help me. And he's still there fighting the Prince of Persia. He's still holding him. Got a chokehold on him, I guess. Until I get done answering your prayer. And let me tell you something. This angel talking to Daniel, I stood to confirm and strengthen Michael. Literally, these angels that are of a realm of being, not necessarily mystical and strange, but other than us, get tired and struggle and fight, apparently. There are territories. There were those that argued in the Vietnam War that we should set up an enclave system of battle and hold that territory. Apparently, God has assigned the heavenlies. Satan still has access, as the book of Job says, to ascend to the throne of God and accuse every one of us. Until Satan was defeated at Calvary, and Jesus took the keys of death, hell, and the grave. Satan held the power of death, the greatest weapon against man. But Jesus snatched that power. And in his place is the power of resurrection and eternal life through him. Until Jesus did his work at Calvary, looked beyond my faults, saw my need, and gave himself, and lets me stand approved of God, not on my righteous performance, but in the gift of God's grace, that I may stand on His performance, and my faith can be substituted for my works. Job had to bear the pain of being accused by Satan and prove up his righteousness. I'm still being accused, as you are. But the Lord just looks at the one on His right hand, and as the Ephesian letter says, we're seated with Him. And says, shut up, accuser. They don't have to be perfect to come home anymore. Like the prodigal son, I can meet him halfway down. He comes knowledgeable of his sins, but I can meet him and throw a feast and put a ring on his finger. So shut up. But he still has the access. After the resurrection, Jesus says, don't touch me. I haven't yet ascended to my Father. The type of the high priest who offered the sacrifice in full view of all in the outer court, but must take that which was the symbol of the life, the blood, into the presence of God and let its acceptability be testified there. He had not yet ascended to the Father, where God would accept the sacrifice for all man's sins in that moment. At that second, victory was won. The book of Hebrews says Jesus himself had to literally fight himself, his way through the heavenlies. Why is the Bible and Christian faith so full of the context that we fight the fight of faith? We're in spiritual warfare, put on the whole armor of God. I sometimes think I'm the only voice preaching Christianity in today's world. Who ever heard a revolutionary say, well, bless their hearts.
I mean, here comes Lucifer. Hello, sir.
Now, don't get carried away in know-nothing assumptions. Michael's the toughest one. He was assigned to protect the Jews. Thank God we got some angels protecting the church. But Michael was their prince. When Moses, the deliverer of the Jews' body, was at stake, Jude in the New Testament says, Michael and Lucifer fought over the body of Moses. And even Michael would dare not rebuke him without respect, but said, the Lord rebuke you. But Michael won. In the last warfare, Michael will wrestle with the dragon and cast him out of the heavenlies. But that hasn't happened yet. He's ruling. He has access to the throne of God. He has access to this earth. And he has, out of the third of the angels kicked out of heaven, some of them are his to command, and they are princes of earthly territories. Believe me, there's one up in San Francisco, and we got him so mad, he's killing Klystron tubes on other stations trying to get us. The devil is very real. Now, this angel says, I fought through, and it took me 21 days. Michael is there contending. I strengthened Michael. But now I'm going back, and I'm going to fight the prince of Persia. And when I get done with him, lo, the prince of Greece will come. Now, Alexander the Great, as the he-goat picture shows in Daniel's prophecies, zoomed across the land until it looked like his feet were not touching the ground. So fast did he move. The Medo-Persian Empire just collapsed in front of him as he overran clear through the Himalayas. Sure, I know the phalanx was a marvelous military instrument. But Alexander the Great is insane. And anyone in history is missing the truth if they think Alexander the Great did it. It's this prince that came to answer Daniel's prayer of the heavenly hosts on God's side, that went back and fought the evil prince of Persia that Michael was fighting against to hold him there so he can answer the prayer. You understand that the very warfare of heaven had Michael come with an angel and break a line. In Vietnam, you know, I'm told, special forces, specially trained people, many times had to rescue fallen pilots before the enemy got them. That's penetration through enemy territory. You have the same scene here in Daniel 10. Only it's angels. And here is a servant of God praying in the enemy court, ruled by an earthly king of Persia, but really ruled by a prince of Persia, which is an evil demon spirit under the dragon, which is Satan. For the angel to get to this saint of God, he must fight the prince of Persia, and Michael, the prince that is helping God's people, must help him. Michael's doing the diversionary action in spiritual warfare and fights the prince of Persia, holding him off, while the angel can penetrate to Daniel. Then he's going to go back and beat the tar out of that prince of Persia. When he's done, the prince of Persia is collapsed. And boom, the prince of Greece, empowering Alexander, will overrun. Where does that prince of Greece go? Bottomless pit. That's why I wanted to go sideways. The beast that thou sawest is that prince of Grecia. He was ruling over Greece. Now we're back to the Isle of Patmos, the Roman Empire. The prince of Rome has now overrun the Seleucid Empire, the last remnant ruled by the prince of Greece. And when the Seleucid Empire is crushed under the Roman foot, and the leopard is crushed, and the nondescript beast comes, which is the Roman Empire, that evil prince of Greece was assigned to the bottomless pit. That's the beast that he saw. He was at one time, is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world. Still talk about this bottomless pit for a minute. You say, you believe those bottomless pits? Yeah. The fifth angel of the ninth chapter. We're getting down to those last. This little, same time, but prior to that war where Jesus wins it at the end. The fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven into the earth. That's an angel. And to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. This is the fifth trumpet. Now, in the book of Revelations, the events that happen are first seals that are opened, trumpets, and then vials. We're in that middle portion. This all happens the last 3.5 years of tribulation. The fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth. To him was given the key of the bottomless pit. There's only one word in the Greek, abyss. We carry that word in the Greek over into the English, and it becomes an English word, abyss. And he opened the bottomless pit. Lucifer and a third of heaven were cast out. Jeremiah saw it. Jesus saw it. Jeremiah saw the earth before man was on it. I repeat what I said earlier. Ezekiel saw Lucifer in Eden before he ever fell. Suddenly Jeremiah saw a cataclysm strike the earth. Mountains were moved. And then it says the earth became a waste and a desolation. Genesis 1:2 picks up a recreative period from there. The first chapter of Genesis is not the creation. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Genesis 1:1. You've got to go to Jeremiah. Jeremiah says it was not a waste and a desolation. Jeremiah saw it in those days. Dwelling places, inhabitants of intelligent beings, but he says with amazement, no man. Ezekiel, I repeat, and Isaiah saw Satan having access to this earth then, before he had fallen. Job saw him as the crowning cherub in the mountain of heaven. He gets lifted up, decides to make war on God, and he's cast out, and a cataclysm strikes this earth, and it becomes a waste and a desolation. Genesis 1:2. The earth became a waste and a desolation. Spirit of God brooding over the face of the deep, and then the recreative process starts. Why do you think God said to Adam and Eve, replenish the earth? He didn't say plenish it. Why do you think he created some things and called forth the herbs and the grasses from seeds already there? It wasn't Adam and Eve that had to deal with dinosaurs. It was superhuman beings that had access before war broke out in the heavenlies. Satan took a third with him. Some of those angels are released. God determines how many troops they've got. They're given assignments. Prince of Persia, Prince of Greece, Prince of Rome, Prince of San Francisco, Prince of Egypt. Now, the Prince of Greece ruled in Alexander's day and kept a foothold until the Seleucid kingdom was conquered, and he went to the bottomless pit. Some of them are loose, some of them are sealed up. He opened this bottomless pit where some of them are sealed up. Listen to it. There arose a smoke out of the pit, as the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit, and there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth. These ain't like no locusts you've ever seen. Unto them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth have power. And it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing. Locusts, ordinary locusts, eat grass. Neither any tree, but only those men which have not the seal of God in their foreheads. Listen to me, we'll be gone. Antichrist rises to power. Restoration of the old Greek Empire. The beast out of the bottomless pit was turned loose to establish that final government. He makes peace with Israel in the middle of the week. These terrible, what the Bible calls the tribulation the great, which is the outpouring of God's earth on the earth. The Jews are still here. The church is gone. The Gentiles that are not in the church, still here. And this ruler has made peace with Israel. But then he breaks the covenant. Then God unleashes his wrath. And this fifth angel opens the bottomless pit. These locusts, it was given to them that they should not kill, but that they should be tormented, the men on the earth, 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when he striketh a man. In those days shall men seek death and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. And the shapes of the locusts were like unto horses prepared unto battle, and on their heads were, as it were, crowns like gold, and their faces were as the faces of men. Horrible, demoniac forces. And they had breastplates, as it were, breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was as the sound of chariots of many horses running to battle. And they had tails like unto scorpions, and there were stings in their tails, and their power was to hurt men 5 months. Some people say that's helicopters. I mean, some people really strain the Scripture to try to interpret it. The Bible says they're intelligent beings. Demon forces. You don't have to hunt for a helicopter to fulfill this. Helicopters don't come out of the bottomless pit. They had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in the Hebrew tongue is Abaddon. I could do something on that. He was a bad one, all right. But in the Greek tongue hath his name Apollyon. One woe is past. Now the sixth angel sounds. Sixth angel's trumpet blows, says, loose the four angels which are bound in the great river Euphrates. There's some great kingdoms in that river Euphrates area. Apparently some of the princes there were just bound up somewhere in the heavenlies and left. Others, the Grecian prince, put in the bottomless pit, as Satan will be 1,000 years after Armageddon. But these four angels are turned loose. What's it say? They come. Strange-shaped horses, in this case. Strange horsemen. Power in their mouth and in their tails, and tails like serpents. And heads that hurt. You know how many of them? You don't think there's a lot of demons running loose? 200,000. You want to factor that? And we still haven't exhausted them. And that's only a third of heaven. Some in the bottomless pit to be released. Some put in the bottomless pit to stay. You say, oh, come on now, Scott. You're off there in that fantasy land of the book of Revelation. You really believe that there's a region called the abyss where God assigned some of these demons? I sure do. He's not going to let the forces get out of hand. The devil's loose, alive and well. Access to heaven, king of the heavenlies, capable of ruling the nations, giving power to them. He has lieutenants called the Prince of Persia, the Prince of Greece. Apollyon is down there, Prince of the Bottomless Pit itself. Hundreds upon hundreds of thousand demons bound up, waiting to be turned loose in that great wrath of God on the earth. Spirits will go out of their mouth, you'll read in one place, to gather people together to the place called Megiddo. Then he sees heaven open, and suddenly Christ comes on that white horse with the saints. And at Megiddo, the final fight. Michael has previously contended with Satan and cast him out of the heavenlies to the earth. You say, oh, you're in fantasy land. How many, let me see your hand. How many remember the demoniac at the Gadarenes that terrorized the village? Remember that? And when the devil would come on him, he'd rend his clothes and they'd bind him with chains and he'd break the chains. Remember that? The village was terrorized. Jesus came. And those demons in him were legion.
He said, "What's your name?" And the demon spoke through the demoniac and said, "Legion." He was filled with legions of demons. And Jesus spoke to those demons. How many know what they said? "Hey, Jesus, don't. Are you come to send us? Don't send us back to the abyss before our time. Don't put us down in that hole. We're part of those demons allowed to work here under our prince." And when they confronted the Lord of glory, Jesus, they knew who he was. And they were in this poor demoniac of Gadarene. They'd throw him around flouncing on the ground. Their power would break the chains. He'd terrorize the village. And Jesus is there. He has authority. That's why Michael said, "The Lord rebuke you." They said, "Don't put us in the abyss before our time comes. Hey, it's part of the agreement. We're running loose. Let us go on those pigs." And the pigs had more sense to let them stay. They died. They wouldn't live with a demon in them. A pig wouldn't. The pigs ran down a hill and drowned themselves. But the demons weren't in the abyss. They were still loose to find some other dumb egg like an attorney general to get in. You think I'm kidding, don't you? "Well, I got to quit. Sure glad I'm going to pastor here till 120. I told you before, I practice a philosophy. I don't just preach sermons. I want people to learn things. I practice a philosophy of learning called Gestalt Theory, where you just lay the whole wad on you enough times that after a while, when you're fighting it, the insight comes. Then we put the pieces. I want to go through the book of Revelation verse by verse. But there are concepts I'm wanting us to see. God stays in control. He determines how many demons are loose and how many are bound. He determines when they get out and when they go in. He raises up nations. He puts them down. There's God and his forces. There's Satan and his forces. And we're the rebels down here. Satan doesn't care if you look like a Christian as long as you don't upset his kingdom. Satan doesn't care what you do as long as you are not furthering God's purposes, which is to set men free for God's purposes and upset the domain of the devil. Well, I guarantee you, anybody that comes along and says, "Come to Jesus, and you'll be happy and rich and wealthy and fat and easy off," is crazier than a loon in the first place, and a false prophet, and the voice of the devil in the second place. That's just the way it is. I'll guarantee you, if you join God's forces, all hell will break loose on you tomorrow. No, today. Understand what's happening. Understand why you look at those holy men in Iran and you think you're looking at the devil incarnate. Understand as we are revolted and one of their, quote, holy men parade dead bodies. Who is it that takes pleasure in death? The prince of evil. Understand, when a mighty nation like the United States plans its rescue, I mean, soldiers can go down to Idi Amin's country and it's just plain good warfare and caliber that pulls it off. But a storm in the desert, an unexplained thing, anybody in the know cannot believe the crash of that airplane and that helicopter with the pros that were involved. Well, the prince of Persia and this angel fought it out and the scene changed. Reason cannot explain a little country like Iran holding this nation at bay. Reason cannot understand why the PLO finds its headquarters now in the headquarters area of the old Seleucid Greek Empire. Reason cannot understand the obsession of the Syrians that simply will not bend. Reason can't even understand why Sadat alienates himself as the biblical king of the south. Whether he is the one or not, the land is setting the stage against Syria, and Iraq, and Iran. God's getting it all ready. God's shaping these things. Superhuman forces are at work, because out of that northern kingdom will come Antichrist. Out of the restored Seleucid Grecian portion of the Greek Empire, that prince out of the abyss will be released again to empower the little horn that comes up in Daniel's prophecies that we've been speaking about, that will uproot three horns of the 10 kingdoms of the revised Roman Empire, and for a day they will give to him power. He won't have to fight for it. They'll give it to him. Daniel says that clearly. He won't have to fight for it. He shall come up and shall become strong with a small people. He shall enter peaceably. But he'll stir up his power and his courage against the king of the south. That's Egypt. And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him. Now we're getting close to Armageddon where it started. I'm back all the way now. With whirlwind and chariots and with horsemen, Daniel 11. And with many ships, and he shall enter into the countries, and shall overflow and pass over. He shall enter into the glorious land, that's Israel. And many countries shall be overthrown, God in control. But these shall escape the shell game again, L.A. Times, Allah. But these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon. Because in the book of Revelation, God's going to provide a place for his people, the Jews, to hide in that day. He shall stretch forth his hand upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. Sadat is setting the stage for Egypt to be overrun by the northern Assyrian and Syrian remnants. He shall have power over the treasures of gold and of silver and over all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps. The tidings out of the east. China isn't going to come under that. Tidings out of the east. Sixth angel will pour out his vial, and the river Euphrates will dry up to make way for the kings of the east. Tidings out of the east and out of the north. Ezekiel 38 and 39 comes in. God's pulling them out of Gog and Magog, the land of Meshach and Tubal. Antichrist attacking Egypt, overrunning Israel. Tidings out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly make away many. He'll win. Then the kings will league again and come to Armageddon. Evil forces will bring them there, the scripture says. And where I started will happen. Jesus will come to end it all and to turn those forces of the earth into dead carcasses for the fowls of the air to feed upon. And at that moment, the angel and the sun that called the birds will step aside, and another angel will descend with the key to the bottomless pit, this time to put them in, not let them out. And he will have on his vesture King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Now, I've said it every Sunday for now the third one. None of this can happen. None of the things that I've been reading you today can happen until Antichrist comes to power. That last king that will come out of Syria or Assyria, that restored Grecian empire of which Iran was a part,
that fight between the North and the South, that giving of the restored Roman Empire of power to this little horn out of Syria or Assyria to rule over all of them. Antichrist is a man, Antichrist government that is seated in that area, and the beast out of the abyss that gives them power. None of that can happen. The Thessalonian letter says the spirit of Antichrist is at work. We sure know it. Duke Majan's got it all over him. California's got it all over it. But that man of sin shall not be revealed until he that restraineth is taken out of the way, the church. We will be caught up to be with him before the great tribulation is unleashed upon this earth. When we're gone, that wild olive branch, as Paul calls it, the Gentiles that God had dealt with to bring his church forth, will be gone. And in its place, God will graft the old olive branch back on, and the last 7 years in history where God deals with his people begins with the white horse of Revelation 6. And Antichrist comes to power in that Grecian kingdom, will begin to be troubled with the king of the south, will make a covenant with Israel, will set up his kingdom, and these terrible things will come upon this earth. We then will come back, as I started this message, when Jesus comes, finishing the great tribulation at the war of Armageddon. I said I wasn't going to preach an hour and a half. I did. I want to tell you something. This is where I was heading and ran out of time. I want you to check and read and write it down. Isaiah 10, 20 to 27. Isaiah 30, verses 18 to 33. Isaiah 31, verse 4 to Isaiah 32, verse 20. Micah, chapter 5, verses 3 to 15. This is where I was going to go today. I thought I'd be here in about 30 minutes. And then I was going to spend 15 brief moments to show you that these prophecies of the last day that I've just given you, Antichrist is literally named that Assyrian who will, in the last days, be that demon prince of Greece, reincarnate as the old Grecian empire, becomes the base for Antichrist rule in the days just before Armageddon. Thank God, we'll be gone. I have one purpose these days to show you. God's book describes events as they are and future before it happens. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. We're rebels in a domain that is presently ruled by the prince of the power of the air. We have turned against him, and we can only stand against him in the power of our Lord's might. But greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world.